The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Hey folks, Bob here with this week's Bubble Genius Showcase Item of the Week. With Memorial Day coming up, what better way to celebrate than by buying a soldier a shower? Go to Bubble Genius right now and purchase either the Buy a Soldier Soap Set, the FUBAR Massive Military Bath Bar, or the Buy a Soldier a Powder. That's talc-free powder with tea tree oil and zinc oxide for extra absorbency. And Bubble Genius will ship your purchase directly to a soldier stationed overseas. Only $1, $12, or $7 each at BubbleGenius.com. But if you use our promo code Bob and Chez, that's B-O-B-A-N-D-C-H-E-Z, you'll get 15% off your entire order only at BubbleGenius.com. And now let's start the damn show.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Can we take it from the top?
Yeah, let's try it.
He will rock you. He will roll you. Baby, don't you know? My heat will move your soul. Love me today. Love me tomorrow. All day, all night, you feel my heat. Feel my heat.
I think we should repeat that again.
Feel. Feel my heat.
Feel my heat. Yeah, it's definitely cool.
I think we're ready to lay it down.
Let's lay it down. Nick?
You want to lay it down?
Are we rolling on the rehearsal?
The best music on the best station.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
It is Thursday, May 19, 2016, and this is the Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com. I am Bob Seska. That is Chez Pazienza sitting right there.
Hey there.
Right there, in his chair. Or on your couch. Are you on your couch? You're on your couch.
I am on my couch. I'm always on my couch.
We are brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. It's the best soap and bath and body products ever in the world. We're also brought to you by the Bowen Law Group and attorney Charles J. Bowen. If you need a lawyer, better call Bo. Or you could just go to thebowenlawgroup.com/Bob and Chez. Or you could just click the link on the podcast page. Very easy to do that. Okay, I don't know. I guess the theme of the show is today, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. Because we are going to spend a little bit of time talking about the Nevada convention. The Democratic convention in Nevada. I hadn't planned on it. Obviously, we didn't talk about it on Tuesday. I hadn't planned on discussing it, but there was something that occurred today on Facebook that made me go in and take another look. So we're going to get into that in a little bit. But we're going to start by talking about Donald Trump, of course. And, you know, we've been hearing for quite some time now, and we hear it occasionally in politics, especially when it comes to the Republicans, and just rank incompetence by various politicians. It's like what we hear from supporters of those politicians is, well, don't worry, I understand they're kind of stupid, but they'll bring in smart people to surround them and advise them and tell them the right things to do. And as we've witnessed with Donald Trump, that's just not happening. He's bringing in Ben Carson to choose his vice president. He's bringing in Rudy Giuliani to be his Muslim expulsion czar, or whatever you want to call it. Chris Christie, his advisors are making one blunder after another. He's surrounded by idiots and sycophants. That's who Donald Trump is surrounded by. And on the
were you really? Yeah, I mean, was anyone really expecting that? That he wouldn't surround himself with those kinds of people. I mean, that's exactly what he's done his entire life.
Yeah.
Well, and the joke that I made about his cabinet essentially being, you know, the political version of Celebrity Jeopardy. Even the people on Celebrity Jeopardy, if you watched how they interacted with them, and I'm actually friends with somebody who was on the not Celebrity Jeopardy,
Celebrity Apprentice.
Yeah. Celebrity Apprentice. Yeah. Pardon me. yeah, that too. Yeah, my I'm like fried as hell today.
Oh, I know.
No, but I know somebody who was on the regular Apprentice.
Yeah,
and she said, she's like, there are all these, you know, you have to call him Mr. Trump. You have to do, you know, it's just this fawning that they have to do. Mm-hmm. So, of course, he's going to pack his cabinet with that same kind of thing.
Yeah.
With these people who will do nothing but fawn over him.
And there is one in particular, and the reason we're bringing this up is Trump's senior press advisor appeared on CNN today to discuss something that Trump said in a weirdly complimentary way about Kim Jong-un,
yeah.
The despotic leader, the boy leader of North Korea, who had various family members and members of his own cabinet killed, assassinated in his rise to power. And Trump was speaking about how incredible that is. And so CNN brought in someone by the name of Healy Baumgardner, who is the senior press advisor to Donald Trump. This is the go-to person advising Donald Trump and representing Donald Trump to the press. Again, her name is Healy Baumgardner. Now, I'm going to play this clip from CNN. And we're going to start out with host Carol Costello asking Baumgardner about Trump's remarks on Kim Jong-il.
Is it Kim Jong-il or Kim Jong-un?
Kim Jong-un. Is it Kim Jong-un? Yeah, Kim Jong-un.
Are you talking about the kid?
Yeah, the kid. It's Kim Jong-un. Kim Jong-un. Okay, Kim Jong-un.
Now we both made mistakes.
Okay. Kim Jong-un. Too many names. I mean, Healy Baumgardner pushed all the other names out of my head.
That's true.
So here's Healy Baumgardner, senior press representative of the Donald Trump for President campaign on CNN today.
So just to refresh our viewers' memory, Kim executed his uncle. He executed his aunt. He executed his military chief. He executed his vice premier. What was Mr. Trump trying to say, Healy?
Well, I think top line, you know, Mr. Trump's point is that he wants to keep an open dialogue and repair relationships with world leaders.
But what was he trying to...
Okay, now, remember that line.
Yeah.
Because robotically, that's the only thing she says.
To say in January at his campaign rally...
Generally speaking, you know, he wants to have an open dialogue to repair relationships with leaders throughout the world.
I know, but
Carol, I think I can answer that question.
Okay.
So she said the exact same answer twice in a row, robotically, as if reading off a script. We'll continue on here.
Yeah, and I'm just, well, Healy, you can't give us any more guidance on this.
Carol Costello, visibly and vocally disturbed by the lack of ability of Healy Baumgardner to answer the question.
You are the senior press representative for Mr. Trump.
I am, exactly. And what I'm telling you is that top line, you know, his one of his biggest goals is to repair relationships with leaders throughout the world.
Okay, then. Amy?
Okay, then.
Wow, that's just, it's like talking to a child. Good job, Carol.
Yeah, absolutely. We continue on, because now she says something else twice in a row.
So Healy, I want to ask you about something else. Donald Trump is expected to meet with former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. He's expected to do that later today. Why Henry Kissinger and not another Secretary of State? Healy?
I'm sorry, was that question to me? Oh, yes. Yeah. Sorry about that. I had a little feedback.
No worries.
You know, Mr. Trump regularly meets with experts and highly respected individuals, and, you know, he values their input and their feedback.
And what do you suppose they'll talk about in this meeting? Do you know, Healy?
You know, I can't confirm or deny the meeting. I do know that Mr. Trump, you know, values feedback of highly respected individuals and experts, and, you know, he will have those conversations as he deems fit.
Wow. How do you feel, Amy, about this meeting with Henry Kissinger?
That's it. Holy crap.
We thought Katrina Pearson was a joke.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's Trump's senior press representative, Healy Baumgardner. Again, the caliber of people surrounding Donald Trump, who himself is completely incompetent, especially when it comes to being, you know, a would-be president. And now he's bringing in people who are just as incompetent, if not worse, than he is.
Because, of course, because that's the kind of – Donald Trump is a classic example of the sort of Dilbert model that says that you always, you know, you always hire people beneath you who are dumber than you.
That's right.
To make yourself the smart one. And when you consider how stupid Donald Trump is, you can only imagine what the people beneath him will be like.
So standing by on Skype today is Trump's senior press representative, Healy Baumgartner. Healy, what do you make of these accusations that you just repeated the same thing over and over again?
Well, I think top line, you know, Mr. Trump's point is that he wants to keep an open dialogue and repair relationships with world leaders.
But what exactly do you mean by that? Is he going to develop a relationship with Kim Jong-un?
Well, I think top line, you know, Mr. Trump's point is that he wants to keep an open dialogue and repair relationships with world leaders.
Let me ask you this, Healy. What is Donald Trump's favorite food?
Well, I think top line, you know, Mr. Trump's point is that he wants to keep an open dialogue and repair relationships with world leaders.
I think you get the idea. By the way, I didn't mean to play that fart sound. My big beefy fingers hit the wrong button, but you know, it kind of fit. It was kind of happy. They call that a happy accident. All right. So that's, again, another great example of the caliber of people surrounding Donald Trump. So very presidential of him. Meanwhile, this is kind of scary. That was fun, but this is going to be scary. This is the medicine that you have to take after the fun.
I think
at
that's
the
actually really scary.
Yeah. No, it is.
That scares the hell out of me.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah. You know, you're right. You're right. It ought to scare the hell out of everybody. The fact that this guy is essentially a 50-50 shot from the presidency. And this is the kind of people he's surrounding himself with, complete sycophants and jackasses and morons.
Yeah, it's a clown show. And I mean, and this is the thing that really bugs me is that I want to laugh at this stuff. Mm-hmm. I do. And it was so easy to laugh at months ago.
Yeah.
But it's very hard to laugh at now because we are in a position right now where it is entirely possible for this monumental idiot to be elected president of the United States.
Yeah, and when you hear Trump say things like this,
I know words, I have the best words.
He doesn't even have people who have the best words. Not only does Trump not have the best words, I mean, but his people on CNN, no less, repeatedly said this over and over again.
Well, I think top line, you know, Mr. Trump's point is that he wants to keep an open dialogue and repair relationships with world leaders.
And this is like a lot of management speak in there. Do you notice that? Also, top line. Everyone's going, yeah, top line. That's right. Woo, go Trump. Make America great again. Top line.
Yeah, I mean, but that's exactly, I don't think that this should surprise anyone. Right. Knowing the kind of person Trump is, the kind of thin-skinned jackass that he is, that he has to have people beneath him who are yes men and people who aren't anywhere near as smart as he is.
Yep, that's right.
And I mean, granted, he thinks he's brilliant, but he's an idiot. So the people beneath him are going to have to be just, I mean, honestly, like one-celled organisms.
But meanwhile, adding terror to the fear, we have a latest poll, a brand new poll from Fox News Channel showing Donald Trump with a lead over Hillary Clinton nationally, 45% to 42%, which is a 10-point swing since the previous Fox News survey about a month ago.
Right.
That's horrifying.
Yeah, I mean, there's no need to panic just yet.
No.
But under no circumstances should that be discounted.
That's right. And of course, that leads us back to our mantra on all of this, which is don't get happy. You know, this thing is far from being in the bag. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for the fact that we should discount national polls because it all comes down to the Electoral College anyway. It's got to be state by state. You have to look at those polls specifically to find out what the outcome is going to be. But this is kind of the national polls give us a sense of where the American voter is at any given
I mean,
point
and,
in time.
And I go with Nate Silver that it's still this far out. It's not. They tell you very little.
Right.
There's so much time for things to change. Mm-hmm. I think that Trump is getting a little bit of – it probably is anyway – getting a little bit of a bump because it's just this psychological thing that he has wrapped up the nomination.
Yes.
The fight is over for him. And I think that's one of the reasons that I find it so infuriating that things are continuing the way they are for the Democrats.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, because the as far as much as Donald Trump is a just a punchline, the fact is that in the eyes of a lot of people, the clown show, the ongoing sniping back and forth and all that, that's over on the Republican side. And now what we're seeing is we're still seeing it on the Democrat. I mean, we're not seeing it as badly anywhere near as what the Republican side was. But I mean, obviously, Hillary Clinton is still in a, even though she's won, she's still in a battle with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. But I mean, after Indiana, it's amazing how rapidly the Republicans got their crap together. I mean, they basically, Indiana knocked both Cruz and Kasich out of the race, made Trump the presumptive nominee, and that was it. Suddenly, you know, at one point a couple of weeks ago, we were like, yeah, isn't it great? The Democrats are sort of the adults. They're, you know, it looks like it's pretty much sussed out here, and the Republicans are still fighting, and it's a three-way race, and they may take it all the way to the convention, and Cruz is never going to drop out. And then suddenly, Indiana changes everything, and Trump is the presumptive nominee. Yeah. And here we are.
And they rally around him because they are ethically bankrupt.
And then the reversal of fortune takes on a completely different shape when we start to look at an event like Nevada over the weekend, the Nevada State Convention, which
not just Nevada, but what's come in the last four or five days after it.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I wrote something up basically summarizing all of my thoughts that I'm going to present on the show. I wrote that up for the Daily Banter today, so you can cheat along. You can read along as we recap some of that. But, of course, we're going to be adding new dimensions to it and some new information as we go throughout the course of the show. But we're going to get that in just a few minutes. Also today on the show, we're going to talk about Trump's tweet about that plane crash that occurred today. Kind of irresponsible and raises an interesting question, because as we know, Trump is getting CIA briefings now. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. Plus, and along the lines of the Democratic race, just so a few words in defense of our friend Stephanie Miller, who's getting, I think, very unwarranted and vocal attacks against her on Facebook right now because of the whole Democratic primary race and everything like that.
So you mean like Bernie people are attacking her?
Yeah.
Wow. Honestly, I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
How is that possible? I mean, they're so civil.
And then, of course, we're going to talk about this awful Oklahoma bill that basically makes abortion a felony. They've just gone there. They said, you know what? We're tired of dancing around the issue. F it. Let's just make it a felony. Not even a misdemeanor, not even something. Well, it's illegal, but we're not going to punish women. Nope. It's a felony. It's going to be a felony in Oklahoma. And I'm fairly certain that ridiculous Mary Follin, the governor of Oklahoma, is going to sign this bill. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first, we have to talk about Harry's Razors, of course. Okay, at some point, you know, having a clean, close shave is going to become the new big, giant Civil War beard. I just know that trend's going to come back. And there's still plenty of us who like to shave every day and have a nice, clean, close shave and not to spend a whole lot in the process of actually just shaving the hair off of our face or our armpits or our legs, depending on who you are. But I shave my face every damn day. The problem is this, I always get terrible, terrible razor burn with those store-bought blades, especially on my neck. I know, gross, I'm sorry. Too much information. But then I discovered Harry's Razors. Harry's offers a high-quality, German-engineered shave that's better for your face and your wallet. It's about half the price of other big brands' blades. They ship to you, free to your front door. Plus, you don't have to go to the customer service counter and get them to unlock the blades for you at the store. And at those big box stores, by the way, for some reason they have those locked cases on the rack, which is just ridiculous. Then you got to scour all over the store to find someone to unlock that rack. Why pay $32 for an 8-pack of blades when you can get them for half the price at Harrys.com? They have a starter set, an amazing deal for just $15. You get a razor, moisturizing shave gel, and 3 razor blades with a money-back satisfaction guarantee. Stand up against overpriced store-bought blades in their protective glass display cases with Harry's Razors. Go to Harrys.com, enter the promo code BANDC for $5 off your first Harry's shave. Plus, you'll be supporting the show by taking good care of your face or your legs with Harry's Razors. That's HARRYS.com. We'll be right back.
The Bob and Chez Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Thank you, Buzz. Welcome back to our big Thursday show. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, that Donald Trump is getting classified CIA briefings now that he's the presumptive presidential nominee for the Republican Party.
And you know that at some point he's just going to blurt something out.
Well, I kind of think he did it today on Twitter. And of course it's going to be on Twitter.
Of course. And that's where he's going to do it. Right.
Right, right. There was a plane crash today, tragically. There were 66 people on this plane. It was Egypt Air flight. And search and rescue teams are looking. They found some scraps of what they thought was the plane, but they determined just recently, just before we started the show, that maybe those scraps weren't parts of the airplane. This Egypt Air flight crashed shortly after taking off from Paris. 66 people on board, including 3 children. Authorities believe the plane crashed, but they have not said exactly what happened or if the crash was terrorism related. But leave it to Donald
Trump, of course.
Donald Trump says that the crash was probably terrorist related. He said here on Twitter, this is about 3 o'clock in the morning. He tweeted, looks like yet another terrorist attack. Airplane departed from Paris. When will we get tough, smart, and vigilant? Great hate and sickness! Exclamation mark. That was Trump's big... Great hate and sickness. That, of course, is because...
I know words. I have the best words.
Yeah.
That's his new death metal band.
Great hate and sickness. Jesus Christ. And then my question is whether or not he got this information from his CIA briefing.
He may have. Or that could just be an example of Trump just jumping to conclusions.
Yeah, just knee-jerking.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, it's always funny to me, and this
a really frightening thing when you think about it, that's what he, you know, that's the conclusion that he immediately jumps to on Twitter, which is, you know, exactly the kind of thing that you need from a president of the United States.
Yes.
A guy who just, he'd be holding a news conference, like he would have held a news conference at 9 o'clock last night. Mm-hmm. You know what? It's probably terrorism. Yeah, it's terrorism.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it very well might be. But we don't know yet. And this guy, he's just not some ordinary guy on Twitter. This guy is the presumptive nominee. He's a 50-50 shot away from being president of the United States. First of all, at this point, he shouldn't even be on Twitter. He should have staffers do, you know, the sort of the typical thing that people of that caliber do with Twitter, which is to, you know, ballyhoo press releases, maybe check in occasionally with a blurb here or there, something fun for the people following along on Twitter. But for the most part, Donald Trump should not be blurting anything on Twitter. I mean, not only would it be detrimental to his campaign, which I certainly don't mind, but also I think it gets to the point where it could be detrimental to things like national security. That might be a problem.
Yeah.
Talking about how, you know, what might have caused an airplane to go down over the Mediterranean. I guess this is something that's okay for, you know, the Republican nominee for president to just blurt out. That it was a terrorist attack.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean, though. I mean, this is just another one of those sort of examples of how just completely irresponsible Donald Trump is as a human being.
That's
and
right.
Certainly as someone who is running for elected office. Highest office in the free world.
Irresponsible, undisciplined. I mean,
sure.
I mean, undisciplined to me is the... You talk about something... Maybe we'll just ask Healy Baumgart. Healy, what do you think the biggest problem is for the Trump campaign and national security?
Well, I think top line, you know, Mr. Trump's point is that he wants to keep an open dialogue and repair relationships with world leaders.
Thank you. That was insightful. Really appreciate it. Stop by anytime. But yeah, I mean, so this is one of those cases where Trump's lack of discipline is on full display and completely irresponsible to go there. Now, imagine him doing this as president of the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the question. Is he going to be doing these, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning Twitter rants when he's president of the United
probably.
States? Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? You know, I wrote a piece for the Daily Banter members section. It hasn't gone up yet, but I imagine it should go up sometime today, maybe tomorrow at the latest. And it occurred to me the other night as I was watching Trump coming up with the best words, obviously, it occurred to me that, you know, Trump isn't necessarily Hitler or Mussolini. You know, as Melania said the other day, he's not Hitler.
He's not Hitler.
I tend to believe that Trump is much, much closer to Richard Nixon than anyone else in the in politics that we've seen at the presidential level, at least in the United States.
Well, sure, because he's thin-skinned.
Yeah, he's thin-skinned. He's he obviously has deep and disturbed issues floating around in his bewigged head. I think Trump is also someone who, to a certain degree, as president, would comport himself a certain way that wouldn't be all too terribly embarrassing. I think he would be embarrassing enough, but I don't think he'd be as embarrassing as we think he might be. The problem with Trump, I think, would be what he's doing behind the scenes. And I think that's where the Nixon comparison would really, I think, flourish. Because, you know, I was thinking about what was in the, during the Watergate scandal, something called the Saturday Night Massacre, where Richard Nixon, obviously facing impeachment, facing all kinds of repercussions in his second term from this horrible, horrible scandal that ultimately ended his presidency and completely demystified the president. John Dean revealed the existence of these this recording system inside the White House and the existence of tapes that would incriminate Richard Nixon in a number of things, including the Watergate break-in, including the break-in into Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office, and so on and so forth, the existence of the Watergate or the White House plumbers and everything like that. So those tapes are out there. Everyone knows about it. The special prosecutor was trying to subpoena those tapes in the White House, and Richard Nixon was refusing to hand over the tapes. It was sort of a de facto admission of guilt on behalf of Nixon, but I guess he considered that to be a better option than actually just handing over the tapes and having all of the awful things that we've learned are in those tapes since then come out in public in 1973 into 1974. So what happened was Richard Nixon, in what was called the Saturday Night Massacre, I think it was October 20th, 1973, Richard Nixon ordered his attorney general to fire Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor. So the attorney general decided, nope, not going to do it. I already made a promise to Congress that I'm only going to fire the special prosecutor for cause. So the attorney general doesn't fire Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor who's seeking these tapes. So the attorney general resigns. The deputy attorney general, this all takes place in one day on a Saturday afternoon. The attorney general resigns. He's replaced by the deputy attorney general. Richard Nixon orders the deputy attorney general to fire Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor. The deputy attorney general refuses and then resigns. So we've gone through, in one day, we've gone through two attorneys general in the Nixon administration. Then Robert Bork steps in. He was the Solicitor General at the time. You might remember the name Robert Bork as being one of Ronald Reagan's failed Supreme Court nominees, spectacularly failed Supreme Court nominees. And so Robert Bork comes in, takes over as acting Attorney General, and then on Richard Nixon's orders, fires Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor, and then replaces him with someone else. A guy, I think the last name is Jaworski, the new special prosecutor of Watergate. Came in and, of course, did the exact same crap that Archibald Cox was doing all along, pursuing those goddamn tapes. So it turned out to be a big nothing for the Richard Nixon administration, other than a massive embarrassment. Now, when I was thinking back about this Saturday Night Massacre, I was like, you know what? That's exactly something Donald Trump would do. I mean, faced with, say, an opposition Congress, faced with a special prosecutor, you know, he would take the office of the presidency into a realm of power that we haven't seen before.
Well, of course he would.
He would act in ways that are unprecedented because he's Donald Trump. And of course, the difference is now, as Ches and I have talked about ad nauseum on this show, now he would have the backing of all his people. It really wouldn't stick the way it stuck to Richard Nixon in 1973.
Sure, because Nixon had some semblance. That was back when there was still some semblance of shame.
That's right.
If you got caught in a screw-up, you had to face consequences. You don't have to anymore. And Trump knows that.
Yeah.
And the very famous Richard Nixon line, you know, if the president does it, it's not illegal. Mm-hmm. That would apply 1,000-fold to Donald Trump, because
that's
Donald
right.
Trump's theory would be, well, if I do it, it's not illegal. Tough shit, get out of my face.
Exactly. And of course, Richard Nixon at the time didn't have Fox News Channel. He didn't have the benefit of, the entire AM radio dial. He didn't have the benefit of internet trolls and cable news and all of it backstopping Donald Trump. Yeah, you know what? he did all this crap, but you know what? The Democrats do this stuff sometimes too. And what about Benghazi and Fast and Furious? What about that? What about the email scandal? What about Hillary Clinton and the FBI? So it would would be the entire debate. It would be not, this is terrible, this is an abuse of power, this is a constitutional crisis, there's a cancer in the White House. None of that would get discussed. It would be entirely about, well, I mean, Donald Trump's doing something heinous, but everyone else does it too, so meh, oh well.
Yeah. And it's, as I mentioned a lot recently, think about the example that sets for everyone, for our culture in general.
Yep.
That, well, you know what? Honestly, the way it works now is if you can be a bully and get away with it, then hey, that's awesome. That's an example shown to us by the President of the United States.
Yep, exactly.
The standard bearer for our culture.
And, you know, honestly, this could have been the case with Ted Cruz. Absolutely could have been the case with John Kasich. I don't think it's within John Kasich's frame of mind to abuse power like that. But I mean, you know, look, the fact of the matter is that any Republican who would step in as president this time would have the benefit of a press that was so favorable, much more favorable to him or her than was favorable to George W. Bush. That's for sure. And, and obviously the press was quite favorable to George W. Bush for a long time because they were terrified after 9/11 to oppose the president in any way, shape or form. It's so funny. If you go back and you watch Fahrenheit 9/11, there's a great series. There's an amazing sequence of people like Dan Rather and Katie Couric and Matt Lauer and just people who you imagine as being standard bearers in the quote unquote liberal media establishment cheering on the onset of the Iraq war. I mean, it's astonishing to hear how loyal the press was to the Bush administration in the years after 9/11, probably up through about Hurricane Katrina. I think that's when things started to turn against George W. Bush. But prior to that, it was basically like, you know what? We can't go against this guy. Otherwise, we're not going to be patriotic. And well, oh well. I mean, Chez, you've got all kinds of stories, I'm sure, from MSNBC with Phil Donahue and his firing and what happened internally there. But now it's like 1,000 times worse. Nothing would stick to Donald Trump along these lines. He could be Nixon, and it wouldn't matter. It really wouldn't matter. We're going to take another break, and then we're going to talk about, oh boy, Nevada right after this.
Hello, it's Bob to tell you about our Patreon page. You might be asking yourself, what the hell is a Patreon page? It's a website where you can help support our podcast by donating money to the show. You can sign up for $1, $5, $10, or $15 per month, or if you're filthy rich, you can sign up for more. In exchange, we'll bring you exclusive Patreon-only content like our post-mortem shows, memberships to the after party, and commercial-free unbleeped versions of our free show. And if we reach our crowdfunding goal, we'll bring you new shows every weekday. That's patreon.com/Bob and Chez, or click the Patreon link at bobseska.com. Let's do this thing.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Top line.
Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Okay. Go shopping for your dad. Father's Day is just around the corner. Go shopping for your dad at Amazon.com. But instead of typing in Amazon.com into your browser, go to BobSeska.com and click the Amazon link. It'll take you right to the front page of Amazon.com. In fact, once you do it, bookmark it. God damn it. So every time you want to go shopping, just hit that bookmark instead of going to the website or typing in Amazon.com. It's really easy to do. And what happens is you go shopping and we get a small commission from everything you buy. It costs you nothing extra and helps support the show. So thank you in advance for doing that. All right. So now just a brief word about our friend Stephanie Miller, who I think as far as radio people go, as friends go, she is as excellent as they come. And I think at this point she's being horribly treated by her listeners, believe it or not. I would imagine a small fraction of her listeners, but still her listeners nonetheless, who are attacking her on Facebook. And there's a meme going around that has a picture of Stephanie Miller, a screen grab from Free Speech TV. And then below it, it says the following. It says in white lettering on a black background, it says, "How to drive away half of your loyal audience." This, I mean, remember, and Chez, this will all sound very familiar to stuff that we've heard, that you've heard, that we've heard about our show, certainly that you've heard about some of the stuff you've written at the Daily Banter and so on. Again, this is how to drive half of your loyal audience away. Number one, say, "I'm so tired of all the infighting between the Dems and have repeatedly sworn not to trash either candidate. Having said that, let's discuss this news item which suddenly criticizes Bernie Sanders." And number two, spend entire segment talking about Bernie, his supporters, campaign managers, or surrogates. Follow up with positive story about Hillary. Repeat 4 to 5 times per show daily. Steph, the reason your Twitter and Facebook feeds are blowing up with hateful, angry messages is because you spend every show hashing and rehashing this one divisive subject. At this point, you are simply fanning the flames. Please, for the sake of those who love you, stop it.
Yeah, but f*** you. It's important. It's an important, it's a huge deal. It's
yeah,
a huge
well,
deal, and fighting, infighting amongst the Democrats, it's not even amongst the Democrats. It's honestly, it's amongst someone who has decided to make the Democrats his adoptive party,
yeah,
and someone who's actually a Democrat.
Well,
so
I
it's
mean,
basically an insurgency within the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and the thing is too, I mean, specifically regarding Stephanie, there are few people who have commented on the Democratic primaries who have been more graceful and fair when it comes to all of this. She is extraordinarily deferential when it comes to this. She could have taken a hardline posture in support of one Democratic candidate or the other. It could have, I mean, it really could have gone either way. I mean, in 2008, like me, she was a supporter of Barack Obama and was against Hillary Clinton. She could have done the same thing this time around and sided with Bernie Sanders, or she could have sided with Hillary Clinton vocally and across the board and been right there ensconced in the shovel fights taking place online and on the radio, certainly in the context of her show. But she didn't. She staked an extraordinarily fair piece of ground here on all of this, which is kind of nuanced and kind of right in the middle, where she's criticized Bernie Sanders. She's also, quite honestly, criticized Hillary Clinton, too. And insofar as maybe there's more criticism of Bernie Sanders, maybe that's symptomatic of the same thing that we say when it comes to the liberal media. Maybe the truth has a very well-known liberal bias, as Stephen yes. Colbert says. Maybe in this case, there were more news stories that were not favorable to Bernie Sanders and fewer that were unfavorable to Hillary Clinton. Maybe
yeah,
that was the case. I don't know for sure.
The reason this is a big deal to the Bernie people is that they refuse to accept, and trust me, having gotten into I don't know how many fights with them, having been public enemy, I won't say number one, but you know, somewhere in the top dozen public enemies for those people.
Yeah.
One thing that they will not admit is that there's a problem.
Yeah.
They will not admit that there's an issue, that they have behaved atrociously.
Well,
that's not a problem. You know, they'll always come back with, you know, this one Clinton person, or, you know, tore up this one Bernie person, you know, online. And oh, I've been accosted by Clinton people. It's like, yeah, but you know what? The reason that it's a genuine problem for Bernie people, because look at the number of articles that have been written about it. Look at the number of times he has been questioned about it. Times he's actually had to step up and say stuff. Now he doesn't anymore. But it's an issue. It's an issue the way they fucking behave.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even still, I mean, that aside, just from a commentary point of view, Stephanie would do so well in the ratings if she had taken one side or the other, but she didn't, and she took a more nuanced position, which I think has probably hurt her numbers a little bit. Because again, what I've experienced personally, and this might not be the case across the board, but I think this is, I think I've had enough experience doing this that I can make a relatively confident claim to say that nuance really gets you nowhere, except it helps you sleep at night. That's ultimately the benefit of taking a nuanced position that I think Stephanie Miller has taken on her radio show. And I think to a certain degree, I have taken with my coverage of the Democratic primaries as well. And it doesn't resonate. It doesn't. You know what resonates? H.A. Goodman resonates. Every time he publishes something on Salon, it's number one in the most read widget. Anytime someone publishes something that's vocally pro-Hillary and anti-Bernie, that goes gangbusters online. Does really well. Gets shared all over the place on Facebook and so on.
It's gotten huge, 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 huge numbers for me
yeah.
over the past several months.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't write it for that reason. I write what I feel and what I think is important and what, you know, a lot of times it pisses me off, and this has pissed me off for months.
But I wrote this up, you know, I included Stephanie in this. I wrote up a piece about Nevada, and, you know, it was, I think, a fairly even-handed article in which I criticized The claims that there was disenfranchisement in the Nevada convention, and then I also criticized the claims that there was obvious violence on the floor of the convention on behalf of Bernie supporters, which I have not seen a video of yet. I've seen, you know, and I don't think there is a video of like someone throwing punches or hitting someone else over the head with a chair or whatever the hell is going around. So, I mean, the point being is that this article that I wrote, probably not going to do all that well. You know, even with that nuanced position, it's not good enough.
Of course it's not good
and
enough.
And it's never good enough.
Of course, because that's where we are right now.
All right. So we're going to take one last break, and we're officially going to talk about Nevada right after this.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius Bath and Body Products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Okay, welcome back to the show. Just wanted to ask Trump Press Secretary Haley Baumgartner, what do you think of the Nevada convention? What do you think happened there?
Well, I think top line, you know, Mr. Trump's point is that he wants to keep an open dialogue and repair relationships with world leaders.
Right. I guess at the end there, the string ran out and just sort of sucked back into her back. Okay. Let's talk about Nevada here. I really didn't want to talk about this.
Why?
Viscerally didn't want to talk because I feel like I'm done. Because I feel like it's over.
But it's
and
not
I feel
over.
Like, yeah, I know.
I mean, it is. It's over. It should be over. By all accounts, this shit should be over.
Yeah,
but I mean, because it is.
I made a conscious choice to say I'm just not covering it anymore because I think it's too important to ignore Trump. I think we have to go after Trump now. I think we have to start that process because
I agree. We're making the correct decision to do that, and that's the thing that you know, because I like to think that we've got our heads somewhat screwed on straight.
That's right.
But there is a pretty large contingent out there who have decided that they won't do that. That they won't, you know, that Trump either isn't a threat or, you know what, good. If Trump wins, terrific. The revolution, the revolution comes quicker. And they have said, especially in response to Nevada, they have said, you know what, we're just going to keep right on going. You know, the Sanders campaign has said we're going to, you know, and they even said today that they don't care whether they hurt Clinton, whether they hurt Clinton and help Trump in attacking her, going into California and moving on to the convention. And that is, to me, that's a huge fucking deal.
Yeah. Well, and part of the problem, I think, is there's a considerable amount of misinformation floating around in terms of what, and I think the only person you can blame is the person at the top, who's Bernie Sanders, for not adequately instructing his followers in terms of the delegate math, in terms of what his realistic chances are. And I understand maybe some of the motivation of it, like, we still have to get to California, we still have to get to June. So therefore, I don't want to lose any support between now and then necessarily. But beyond that, what he's doing is, I think, somewhat destructive insofar as he's giving his people information that is erroneous with regard to how the delegates stack up. And specifically, it started with that press club interview, frankly, a couple of weeks ago.
And he's doing it purposely. Yeah. That's the thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, where he's basically saying that that Hillary Clinton is not going to have a majority of pledged delegates, which is patently untrue. I mean, yeah. She's, you know, the majority of pledged delegates, which Bernie Sanders says is 2383, it's actually 2026. That's a majority of pledged delegates. I mean, with you, when you add superdelegates in there, you get to a majority of 2383. Which I, you know, it's very possible that Hillary Clinton's going to surpass that in pledged delegates alone too, but she's definitely going to surpass 2026, which is a majority in pledged delegates. But the Bernie Sanders campaign is not being clear on that. It's all very complicated, and I think to a certain degree they're able to hide behind some of the complicated rules and some of the complicated math in terms of how they divvy up delegates and how the delegates are apportioned to the candidates. So. These are things that are confusing and difficult to fully grasp. They're especially so on the Democratic side because you have the existence of superdelegates, which you don't have necessarily in the Republican side. So all these things mash up together to be very, very difficult to understand. Very, 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 as Donald Trump would say. So the two conclusions I drew from Nevada is that, one, any claims of election fraud or disenfranchisement at the state convention are false, if not entirely unsubstantiated. Most of it is based on a misunderstanding of the rules. And two, likewise, claims of physical violence at the convention perpetrated by angry Bernie supporters are also unproven. I haven't seen any videos, and I've scoured the internet looking for a video of someone getting clobbered, and I haven't seen any videos of someone getting clobbered.
I got to tell you something. I absolutely hate that.
Yeah.
That thought process.
What's that?
That thought process that because someone hasn't seen, because I've gotten so much of this over the past couple of days, because someone has not seen a video clip with their own eyes that this didn't happen. When you have the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Las Vegas Sun, you know, very incredibly reputable outlets, and eyewitness accounts saying that, yeah, look, you know what? A chair was thrown, maybe more than one. That to me is good enough. I don't have to see with my own eyes to suddenly say, oh my God, okay, I'm satisfied. Because I feel like any arguing against that is basically confirmation bias.
Well,
it's not wanting to believe it.
I don't know. I was looking for it. I was looking for it because I was certain that it happened. And then I tried to find video of it, and I couldn't find video of it. And then I couldn't find any actual corroborative evidence that anyone's saying, oh yeah, I got hit in the face with a chair. I saw one video of a guy.
Oh, I didn't say anyone got hit in the face with a chair.
Well, you know what I mean. I'm just bringing that up as an example. Right. An actual, like, someone, a victim of violence to say, hey, yeah, look, I got a bruise on my face. Someone punched me at the convention. I didn't see any of that either. So, and when it comes to The Sun and when it comes to New York Times and all of these press reports, what we know about the press is sometimes words get thrown in and ideas get presented because they're part of the conventional wisdom, because they're part, or as Rachel Maddow calls it, the common wisdom. And we saw that happen during the Snowden stuff. We've seen that happen on occasion where something gets discussed and then it suddenly morphs into reported reality. And then it just becomes part of the conventional wisdom from there. According to like Talking Points memo and NPR, and I think I'm fairly certain the Associated Press as well, there was no direct evidence of any actual violence. So in the absence of that, all I can do is conclude that, well, until there is evidence, I can't really get on board the idea that Bernie Sanders people were going around clobbering Hillary people at the convention.
No, I don't think that's what happened at all. I don't think even for a second that, you know, Hillary people were getting clobbered by Bernie people.
I mean, was there people were shouting obscenities. That actually happened. People were pushing up against the barricade. That actually happened. Bernie Sanders supporters were angry and shouting, and that actually happened.
Yeah. And you know, and one of my favorite things about this, T-Bog, God bless him, he sent out a tweet today that was just perfect.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, conversation with a Bernie bot. And it was, where's the chair? Show me video with the chair. There was no chair. And then his response is, yeah, but what about the dozens and dozens of misogynistic death threat voicemails that exist? And then if you're like, Bernie bot response, no, what about the chair? What the chair? You know, the chair. Basically meaning that, yeah, you know what?
So there's no video to back up the claim by multiple journalists and eyewitnesses that a chair was thrown. But that doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of the horrific behavior that's come out of this thing.
Well,
which
I mean,
there is 100% proof of.
There's no denying that the entire event was just mayhem and was completely unnecessary, yeah, because it came down to, and I'll get to some of the details here in just a second before we wrap up the show. But the fact is that it ultimately came down to a margin of two delegates. I mean, really, right. What we're talking about is a lot of what Antonin Scalia would have called argle bargle. Over two delegates that wouldn't
exactly.
make a
bit of difference. They wouldn't have won anyway. They wouldn't have won a damn thing. It was a margin of two delegates. And the other thing to keep in mind, and this is – sorry, but this is fact, is that the Sanders campaign sanctioned that. You know, in the days before Nevada, a senior Sanders aide basically got together with a bunch of the delegates and the supporters and said, do not leave. We want you to take over. The quote was, take over the convention.
Right.
Do not leave. Do not leave unless someone from the campaign tells you to leave.
Yep.
And that, to me, is fucking irresponsible.
Well, here's PolitiFact's ruling on this. Of course, PolitiFact ruled that the accusations of disenfranchisement and election fraud are false. I mean, they went with a straight-on false. Not mostly false, not necessarily pants on fire, just false. And the reasoning they came up with was based entirely on the rules and the actual TikTok of what occurred on the day. So here's, and this is me paraphrasing PolitiFact, so bear with me on this. Number one, Bernie delegates seeking to change the rules admittedly failed to propose those amendments during the allotted time. So there was a vote on the rules, but then there were no changes to the rules proposed by any Bernie people. So therefore, what rules are we changing? Well, we're not. Number two, any amendments to the rules needed a two-thirds support from the people, the delegates in attendance. The delegates for each side were more or less split 50-50, about 1,600 delegates on each side, state delegates. So even if the Bernie superdelegate, what's her name, Erin Bilbray, had proposed actual amendments to the rules, they wouldn't have been ratified due to the delegate numbers in the room. Because there was no way there was going to be a two-third majority in support of changing rules to benefit Bernie Sanders when it's, again, 50-50 in the room. Number three, there was a voice vote. There's a video going around on YouTube, in fact. There's a voice vote on making the rules permanent. And it appeared to indicate more Bernie supporters in attendance when they all shouted, it was either yay or nay, but the Bernie people sounded louder and more sustained in their voice vote. But it was likely a fluke because, I mean, how do you accurately determine a voice vote? I mean, this is what I thought when I saw it. It was like a voice vote. 3,000 people are in the room shouting at the same time. How are we going to tell a voice vote? Well, regardless of the voice vote, there were two separate head counts showing a majority of Hillary Clinton delegates in attendance. So if there was an actual paper ballot vote, you know, done by the delegates, if that had been part of the rules, then the Hillary delegates would have come out on top on that just because of sheer numbers. Number five. Okay, this is really important. There was a minority report which protested a decision by the Credentials Committee to eliminate 64 Bernie state delegates per a list assembled by Team Hillary Clinton. As it turns out, six of those delegates were seated by the committee, while the rest were rejected because they weren't registered Democrats or their identities couldn't be confirmed.
Right.
Even with cries of disenfranchisement and all of everything that was going on around this controversy, and this is where the disenfranchisement claim comes into play. Their claims are that these 64 Bernie delegates that were disqualified, well, most of them were disqualified, were disenfranchised. But guess what? According to PolitiFact, only 8 of the 64 disputed Bernie delegates actually showed up at the convention. So even if they hadn't been disqualified, there wouldn't have been 64 delegates to compose this list in attendance to vote in favor of Bernie Sanders. They didn't bother to show up. If the Credentials Committee had said, okay, all 64 Bernie state delegates, they're all official, they're fine, it doesn't matter that we can't identify most of them and we don't know where they live or who they are, fine, they can be, only 8 of them were there. Not even close. Once again, Bernie people failed to appear when needed, a fatal flaw that's plagued the campaign from the beginning. Huge crowds, huge enthusiasm, not enough turnout. Okay, so even if everything had gone Bernie's way, we're way late wrapping up the show. But even if everything had gone Bernie's way, he would have likely only picked up two delegates to the national convention, making it statistically inconsequential for overall victory. PolitiFact rules that, you know, all these accusations of disenfranchisement, completely false. That's where we are. The big controversy is not really a controversy at all. You know, you see, God, again, Cenk Uygur. I saw a video floating around Facebook by Ed Schultz screaming about disenfranchisement and fraud and all these things. Just for God's sake,
this is
understand, understand the rules before you attach your name to something.
This is the problem, though. And this is it. This is where we are. Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of people who are fighting an absolutely lost cause, and they are willing to take down the party to continue fighting this.
Yeah. And of course, you know, no one's going to give a flying rip about what I wrote, because I said things that were, you know, negative toward Bernie, and some things that were negative toward some of the Hillary supporters, including Chez, for that matter, who insists there was violence at the convention. And, you know, because I wasn't prepared to confirm that based on the fact that I couldn't find any evidence in any of the press accounts or any of the videos that were shown.
Wow. Okay.
I know.
No, that's just the bar that you're setting to be able to believe that something happened is a little shocking to me.
Really?
Because if that's true, then you can say that about any story whatsoever, any story that's published. Hey, there was this big fire that happened over here, and it's being reported, but all right, you know what? I haven't seen video of it, so therefore I can't independently confirm it. Well, you can't independently confirm it unless you were there.
Yeah, but I know.
And that's
but
why
I mean,
we pay reporters, because they're there.
I mean, but there were 3,000 people there, not including the Democratic committee, the state committee. What is there any single press account that said victim X was the victim of violence by perpetrator Y?
Absolutely not. And okay. I never said that. And I don't. I'm
but then
not
where
sure
are they
I
getting
saw...
that there was violence? That's what I don't understand. And I'm not making a capital case of this. I just need. I want to find some sort of confirmation that there was violence, and I don't see it.
My definition of violence is maybe a little bit different, which is I don't believe, and I never wrote this, I never said that I felt that anyone was beat up or attacked or anything like that. But basically, throwing a chair, yelling obscenities, creating absolute chaos, standing and screaming and getting in people's faces and calling them bitch and that kind of thing, that to me is violence.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I would categorize that more as being unruly, but I mean, but I see your point. I absolutely do. I see your point on that. All right, we got the post. I assume we're going to continue talking about this on the Postmortem Show. So you want to sign up at patreon.com/Bob and Chez. Sign up at the $5 level and you get two Postmortem Shows every week. At the $10 level, you also get the after party plus the two Postmortem Shows. Sign up at patreon.com/Bob and Chez. We continue next. If not, we'll see you on the after party on Friday, folks. Bye-bye.